Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast and extremely special episode today as Chris Van Vliet joins the show to talk about his career, how he got started in broadcasting, growing up as a wrestling fan, who he'd like to interview, who he'd like to interview if he got another chance. And of course, we spend a lot of time on the current product, including his thoughts on Retribution, Raw Underground, Randy Orton's work. This one is truly an episode you can't miss, so let's get everything started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and boy, am I excited for today's episode. Normally, this is your wrestling nostalgia night. Normally, we would take that trip down memory lane. We'd put ourselves in the DeLorean, make sure that flux capacitor is working, and just go right into a memory lane, and we'd go down that path of yesteryear. Tonight's a little bit different. Tonight, we've got a very special interview, one that I really, really enjoyed, and I'm not just saying that just because everyone says that on their shows. I did. I mean, I could have this guy on every week to talk wrestling, to talk his career, to talk about interviews he's done. I mean, an hour and 20 minutes, whatever we talked about, talk to four was not enough. So this was definitely one we'll have to do again. And if you haven't checked out Chris Van Vliet, by the way, many of you probably know who he is, but if you don't, go to YouTube and subscribe, man. I mean, you're missing out if you don't. And he has interviews with everyone. I mean, almost anyone you can think of, John Cena, The Rock, Hulk Hogan, Peyton Royce, Eric Rowan, as of late, he's doing Billy Kay. He's doing Matt Hardy next week. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, just go to Chris Van Vliet and check out his list. I mean, every one of them is well done. Everyone is professional, and it just, he has a way of talking with his guests that is just, it's just conversational. It's not interview like you're at a job. It's just like you're talking with somebody that you've known for years. And that's what makes it very listenable. It makes it very fun to watch and to listen to. He also has a podcast, by the way, The Chris Van Vliet Show, which is available anywhere you can get podcasts. So check that out. But definitely one for the record books, definitely one that I'd like to get back is Chris. So we're going to get that started in just a minute. But first, if you guys haven't joined the show before, well, here you are. Welcome. This is the WWE Podcast, the unofficial. We're not affiliated with WWE. I have to say that for legal reasons. But we are here 7, sometimes 8 days a week, depending on if there's a pay-per-view. And I say that, but at the same time, this coming week, I'll be on vacation. So you'll be getting your normal shows from my other co-hosts with AEW, NXT, and the WWE rivalries on Friday with my co-host, Anthony DeMarco. And so you'll be getting the regular shows, but I will be on a limited capacity. I will pop on if need be in like very short segments, but for all intents and purposes, I will probably be absent next week and then be returning for the Week in Review show the following Saturday or Sunday. I haven't decided. Probably Sunday I'll be returning. So you're going to want to stay tuned. Again, all next week will be normal content minus the stuff that I do. So definitely stay tuned, and got to have a vacation, right? Like, I haven't taken a vacation in a very long time, and I actually haven't taken a day off work since the whole pandemic started, although I work from home. So does that really count? It's like I've been on vacation for 5-6 months anyway. But one last thing. If you guys haven't checked it out, go on and go over to YouTube, by the way, and also check out The Botch Guy. We did a collaborative Raw review. It was about 15 minutes on YouTube. Check it out. The Botch Guy and I have a little bit of a review there. And I also did an hour-long review about SummerSlam with him on this feed. So go back a couple of episodes and check that out. And one last thing. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can also send the show a voicemail. And that, if you didn't know the number, is at 518-952-0247. So if you want to comment on this show or any other, or just have some thoughts on the product, just please shoot me a voicemail. It's at 518-952-0247. 24/7. So it's not manned. People think I'm going to pick up like it's weird. No, I promise. It's just a voicemail box. So you can do that. Or if you prefer, you can also email me your audio file. Just create a voicemail or a voice file on your phone and send it to me via email, realwwpodcast@gmail.com. All right. Let's get to it, guys. Chris Van Vliet and myself, for the first time ever, hopefully one of many, discussing himself as a broadcaster, his moments, his favorite moments. He reveals his favorite wrestler at the end of the show. And again, we discuss the current product as the bulk of the conversation. I really think you're going to enjoy this one. So for now, I have to say I will talk to you in a little while instead of soon, because I'll be returning on September 6th for my week in review, a big return show planned for that time. But maybe you'll hear from me in between for some quick snippets if big things happen. So, alrighty, guys, enjoy and take care. All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. And as promised, I have with me tonight Chris Van Vliet, who is one of the most well-known interviewers of not just pro wrestlers, but movie stars. And he is with us tonight, and we're going to talk about wrestling, of course. We're going to talk about some of the interviews he's done over the years. We're going to talk about some of the things that I'm interested in on a personal level of maybe, hey, who would he love to maybe have an interview with that he's never done, or somebody that he would love to have a second one with. And so at this time, Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, it's absolutely our honor here at the WWE Podcast, because we are here to talk wrestling with someone that is as successful as probably you can be in your field with as far as pro wrestling interviewing goes. And we are absolutely honored to have you here. And so, Chris, you know, I know that most of our listeners probably know who you are or have seen an interview you've done here and there, but the fact of the matter is that you are not just on YouTube. I know that most of our viewers and listeners know that you have a YouTube channel and very successful one, but you also do other things. I mean, you have a podcast and you're a TV host. Like, so tell the viewers or listeners, what exactly do you do for those that may not know?
Yeah, so wherever you're listening to this, you can also find my podcast. I have the very original name, The Chris Van Vliet Show. So it's not hard to remember that one. But my main background is I'm a broadcaster, I'm a TV host, and that's been my job since I graduated from college. In fact, that's been my job since I was in college, working in radio, working in television. And, you know, it's funny when people will come up to me and say, oh man, this is so great that you interview wrestlers, but I saw one time that you interviewed a celebrity. And it's like, my main job up until maybe a few years ago was just interviewing celebrities. And I took the opening of being able to like meet with actors and celebrities and musicians. And I kind of like one day asked my boss, like, do you think we could interview a wrestler? And that's honestly how it started. Like as me as a fan trying to have the ability to chat with a wrestler. And that's kind of how this whole crazy thing began.
Who was the first one you interviewed? Who was the first person?
Yeah, the very first wrestler I interviewed was Bobby Lashley. Now let's take it way back. I was hosting a show in Vancouver, Canada, on what ended up becoming MTV2 Canada. And I was like, do you think we could interview a wrestler? And my boss was like, yeah, sure, we've done that before. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. You're going to pay me to hang out with a wrestler? Mm-hmm. And Bobby Lashley came to the TV station. He was the ECW champion at the time. So we're going way back here. This was 2007. And he was just a monster of a man. And what a great person to have my first interview with. I actually, last year, I put up the video of this as kind of like a throwback going, I'm aware this interview wasn't great, but we all have to start somewhere.
No, that I'm going to have to dig this one up. I mean, I'm assuming
don't. It's okay.
All right, well, maybe we can have YouTube scrub them somehow. But that's awesome. I do remember him as ECW champion at the time. And that, I believe that was either right before or right after he had the big WrestleMania with Umaga and the hair versus hair. So that was probably the first iteration of Bobby Lashley. That's probably the biggest moment that I remember until he came back a few years ago to WWE. So I know that you've interviewed pretty much a who's who in terms of wrestling. And you've interviewed everywhere from The Rock, which I know you were super excited about. And that was like, from what I understand, I watched one of your videos where you said, hey, Yeah, this was like the top of the top of the top. The guy that if I could have chose anybody to interview, it would have been The Rock, and you got that opportunity. I interviewed John Cena, Kurt Angle. I mean, most recently, Eric Rowan, Peyton Royce, to name a few that you've done just recently. And I guess I can't really ask you if there's a favorite one. I know that that's hard. It's probably a hard answer. But I guess what are the more memorable ones? Maybe not if they're your favorite, because that's, again, probably a difficult one to answer. What are some of the more memorable ones that you've had over the years?
I can tell you my favorite one, only because he meant so much to me as a kid growing up in the Attitude Era. Like, I was walking down my halls of my high school in the late 90s, raising the people's eyebrow and shouting, "It doesn't matter!" at literally everybody. So to be able to fast forward from that 12, 13 years and to be able to have a conversation with The Rock, it was really special. Not just because I was a giant wrestling fan, but because of what The Rock's become. Like, The Rock is arguably the most famous person in the world, the biggest star in the world. And I've interviewed him 9 times. Not that I'm counting or anything.
No. Just a guess. Estimate, yeah.
They always say you shouldn't meet your heroes. But if your hero happens to be Dwayne Johnson, you should 100% meet your hero, because he's kind and he's funny and he's charismatic. And he has this star quality about him where he makes you feel important. Even though, you know, like I said, he's the biggest star in the world. He's self-aware enough to know that this moment's important for you. So, yeah, The Rock, to borrow a phrase from him, brings it every single time you talk to him.
I can absolutely attest to that from what I've seen in the interviews that have happened. And I would say the same thing. I was in that same boat back in the Attitude Era. I'm only a year or two younger than you, so I was in high school probably the same time you were with the Attitude Era. No better time to be a teenager than in the Attitude Era, that encouraged, you know, middle fingers, beer swilling, just people's eyebrows. I mean, you name it. And as you know, you probably got it, at least I did. You know, you had your circle of friends that didn't like wrestling, and then you had your circle of friends that did like wrestling and got it. And those that didn't like wrestling, you'd always get crap from them, and they, "Oh, you like that fake stuff, all that." You know, I mean, that just kind of goes with the territory. But there was no better time, no bigger time than at that point, from about 98 to 2001, 2002, to be a wrestling fan from a ratings perspective, from a star power perspective. I mean, it was an all-star roster at that point, and we took it for granted every single Monday night. I mean, the main events were like, you know, The Rock versus Austin in a tag team match, or, you know, Hulk Hogan versus The Rock. I mean, there were main events that you would like, this is a WrestleMania main event, and we took those for granted back in the late 90s, early 2000s. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was exciting. And I think the cool thing about being in high school at that time is, if you were walking down the halls, and my high school had like 2,000 people, but if you walked down the halls and some guy was wearing a DX shirt or a Stone Cold shirt, you instantly became best friends with him. Like, it's that moment from Step Brothers. Like, did we just become best friends?
Yes.
Yep. And that was the cool thing, that like, wrestling unites us. And for me, that ended up turning into me becoming a backyard wrestler in high school, and then turning any time we went to a friend's backyard party that had a trampoline into some sort of makeshift wrestling match. Oh, I was not just a fan. Like, I was borderline obsessed with this.
It's really funny you bring that up. My friends and I had a group called ECW. It was ESW, East Side Wrestling. And, oh no, we didn't have a ring. It was just like, you know, somebody's old mattress, and we put like wood under it. And we built this like makeshift archway with like a curtain behind it. And we had a fog machine and things like that. And like, we thought we were, you know, legit. Like, I mean, and we took it seriously. We actually planned out the storylines. We had like production meetings. Like, it was insane. I mean, one of our friends ended up getting hurt, so we had to stop. It was one of my friends' houses, and their parents weren't too happy. I mean, but we took it exactly that same way, and it was just part of your life. We would have pay-per-view parties, and, you know, back, obviously, when the pay-per-view model still existed, it's hard to imagine that time now. And we'd all chip in, you know, $20, whatever it may be, and we'd all order the pay-per-view and watch it at that person's house. I mean, it was a different time, but one of the best times ever to be a wrestling fan. Not that to say that today's product's bad. It certainly got its, you know, plus and minuses. But back then, man, it was just a different world. It was mainstream. And even if you didn't like wrestling, you knew who Hogan was. You knew who Austin was. You knew who The Rock was. And I can remember, I actually went to, I was at an amusement park up here called The Great Escape up in Lake George here in New York. And there was tickets that were being offered to those that could win this contest in front of like 200 people, where you had to perform whatever you wanted to perform wrestling wise, and it was based on crowd reaction. And so my brother and I ended up, I ended up giving my brother in front of like 200-300 people the stink face and a stunner on stage, and it ended up winning. It was to WWF No Mercy 2000 when it was Stone Cold versus Rikishi here in Albany, New York. So that is my claim to fame, really. I mean, not a very high one, but there it is.
Wow. So you performed the stink face? You didn't receive the
stink
face?
Oh, no. I was not on the receiving end, no. So it's not bad. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. We're good then. We're good.
So
it's funny. Like, so you're right. Wrestling was mainstream back then. Wrestling was exciting. I think a little bit of that is nostalgia. Like, in the same way that kids who grew up in the Ruthless Aggression era are really nostalgic about that. I just think that, like, we're in a really exciting time right now for wrestling. And I always argue that this is the best time to be a wrestling fan. And I get a lot of people that roll their eyes at me or, you know, come on, man, seriously, the Attitude Era was clearly the best, Monday Night Wars. And I'm like, yes, that was a great time. But at 11 o'clock on a Monday, when Raw and Nitro ended, actually, it ran over. So like 11:07 on a Monday night, you had to wait to watch wrestling. And this is why I will argue that wrestling is better now, because you can consume anything and everything that you want now because of this awesome thing called the internet. And you can connect with fans all over the world because of this awesome thing called the internet. And with that said, I can only imagine how awesome and exciting the Attitude Era would have been, the Monday Night Wars would have been, if the internet was like mainstream back then.
And at the same time, you know, I will agree with you that today wrestling is more accessible than ever, which I think, again, it's a great thing, especially if you want to bring in new fans. You want to make it accessible. You want to make it inexpensive. And yeah, there's YouTube. I mean, we all know YouTube is there. You can punch up anything and more than likely you'll get what you need. But the fact is that even the WWE Network is absolutely revolutionary. You're being charged $10 a month for all the content that they have. And this is not me getting paid to say this from WWE. Like, there is zero affiliation there. But the fact of the matter is that network is absolutely – like, that $10 is a joke compared to what you can get. And I think that one of the things, though, about the internet – is that I'm glad it while it existed kind of in its infancy stages in the late 90s, early 2000s with dial-up and all that, I think that – it not existing was a good thing because it protected kayfabe. It protected a lot of the guys and gals that you see now where, you know, they could have a killer match in the ring and then they're out and they're, you know, hugging, having a drink at the bar after the show. And it's kind of like, yeah, like we all know it's staged, but it's kind of like believing in Santa Claus. Like, I want to believe. And when I see these things, like, it's cool. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, that's stuff you normally wouldn't see. At the same time, I'm like, oh man, like I wanted to believe, you know, it's kind of weird. You know what I mean?
It's definitely a different era. That's for sure. It's definitely a different era where you look, we all know it's fake now. And I think that in the 90s, people were still hanging on to the idea of like, not everything's fake, right? So I think that it's definitely a different era with that now. But yeah, in kayfabe itself is, yeah, I'll say it. Kayfabe's dead. And that's okay. It's just a different era now. And I think that we take it for what it is. We're also way more educated than we were 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. And I think that's a good thing.
I think it is. And I think it's also a testament to the product that even though people have, like, the curtain has been completely pulled back and there's no more secrets, that the fans still stick around and that ratings as of late continue to rise. And that there is that core audience that, yeah, we know it's not real, but it's about getting caught up in moments, creating great storylines, compelling characters, stars. Stars will always sell. Stars sell in any major sport in the world. Movies, right? TV shows. It's about stars, and it always will be, none more than in professional wrestling, or as Vince would like to label it, sports entertainment. And, I mean, that's – I don't want to get into that. But this is something that even though we know it's not real, you could make the same argument though for TV and movies. We know those aren't real, 99% of them. And that's the argument that I always say to people that say, you like that fake stuff. I'm like, what's the last TV show or movie you watched that was actually real? I mean, it's always like a lame argument. It's kind of a lazy argument when people say that. But it is certainly a different era and one that, like you said, it's an exciting era with all the new stars, NXT being absolutely revolutionary in creating these stars, being a feeding ground for WWE, and on its own merit, standing as a legitimate third brand. I mean, that is something nobody would have expected 6-7 years ago.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, no. NXT, And that, hey, if you're a real like wrestling fan for what's going on in the ring, like the actual pure wrestling, NXT blows the wrestling of SmackDown and Raw out of the water. I mean, so much so that when you see someone get called up to the main roster, you're like, oh, I kind of wish they'd go back. Like,
yeah.
They were so much more entertaining down there.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. You always get a little nervous when they come up to the, quote, main roster, even though it's a legitimate third brand. Like with Keith Lee's latest debut, I know I got and I heard a lot of negative feedback from people about how, hey, they changed his music. They changed his look. He's not the same guy. What have they done to him? And I understand the concerns. I mean, at the same time, there have been some guys that, and gals that have come up from NXT that have been ultra successful. I mean, look at Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley. They all came from NXT, and they're all obviously main eventers. They main evented WrestleMania, for God's sakes. So I think that people need to realize that when they come to the, quote, main roster, Vince McMahon is the ultimate end-all be-all. I think Triple H has a lot more say than most people really realize in NXT. And when they come to the main roster, that's Vince's child. That's like his two children are Raw and SmackDown. And Vince, I think, likes to put his fingerprints on the NXT stars coming up, thinking that even if it's not broke, I'm going to try to fix it at times.
Yeah, and I feel like even though you might have been a super huge success in NXT, you come to the main roster, you come to Raw or SmackDown, and I think Vince, it's like starting over. Like, all right, now prove yourself to me. It's like, well, didn't I prove myself earlier? Like, my check is still signed by you. Mm-hmm. Like, why is this any different?
Exactly. No, that's exactly what it is. And I mean, again, people just right now are losing their minds over Keith Lee. And again, I have mixed feelings on Keith Lee. The thing is, if people are that concerned about the music and or the attire of somebody, those are things easily fixed. I mean, those are things that can be changed at the drop of a hat, whereas promo ability, presence, and in-ring ability are things that can't be changed so quickly. So if it's something superficial that fans are concerned about, I would maybe tamper your anger and realize, hey, this is something that can be fixed. He's got all the foundational assets to be still a big star. So so I want to move on a little bit here. And I know that, again, you have a YouTube channel that is massive, and it has so many great interviews that you've done. And again, the most recent was Eric Rowan, which I thoroughly enjoyed hearing from him after his WWE departure. But I know that you have a really exciting one coming up next Tuesday. Is that right?
Yeah, so I have the opportunity to talk to Matt Hardy, which I'm really excited to talk to Matt Hardy and just kind of dive into everything that he's done, because it's been an incredible, incredible career. I mean, most recently with the Broken Matt Hardy stuff, but I was also a huge fan of Version 1, obviously the Hardy Boys, one of the greatest tag teams of all time. So I'm really interested to dive deep. That's what I like to do with my interviews, like kind of dive deep, figure out like what makes someone tick. And people always use the term reinvention with Chris Jericho. And if you think about it, I mean, Chris Jericho's the master of reinvention. But I think you could also put that moniker on Matt Hardy. He's done so many different things. And I love that he's now embracing this and kind of showing it off to the world. You know, the whole idea of the Lake of Reincarnation. We saw a little bit of that during the Stadium Stampede match. It's kind of like, yeah, I did this really cool thing in the late 90s. Then I did this other cool thing a few years later. A couple years after that, I turned my character into this other thing that really worked well. And crazy to think that, like, in the later years of his career, he's had the most success. And who would have thought? Who would have thought at the, you know, the outset of the Broken Matt Hardy character that this would be his most popular gimmick that got him over, man, more than anyone at that time in wrestling?
I don't think anyone would have saw that. I mean, again, the evolution, or the, like you said, reinvention, reimagination, whatever you want to call it, is to me, and I think to a lot of stars that I've heard talk about this, if you're in wrestling for a long time, is the ability to adapt and change to an ever-evolving audience need, want, or if you feel your character's getting kind of stale, then most likely the fans have been feeling that way for a lot longer than you have. So, and Undertaker alluded to this, I believe, in his documentary about, and the stars that they interviewed for his documentary, that, hey, like, this is how you survive, this is how you thrive in wrestling, is being able to know, you know, if you can ahead of time, that, look, you know, I feel like things are getting a little bit stale. Let's tweak this. Let's add this. Maybe grow my hair out. Maybe it is a heel turn, a babyface turn, whatever it is. And that is exactly, like you said, Undertaker could do that. Chris Jericho. And yes, of course, Matt Hardy is absolutely on that list. And the, I mean, that chair shot that Sammy Guevara gave him, that was brutal. And that actually made me a little bit concerned for his health. If anybody here follows AEW, I'm sure you do. The fact is, like, that was not intentional from what I can see. And that was damn brutal.
Let's call that what it was. It was a mistake. I mean, or an accident, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, obviously was not supposed to happen that way. I think it was, I don't even know if the chair was planned. Who knows? Kind of just looked like Sammy picked it up and just kind of threw it in his direction. It landed so perfectly on Matt Hardy's face, you know, which I think that partially maybe he was lucky that it could have been worse. But that was a lot of blood. That was a lot of blood.
That was more, when you see that, you go, yeah, that wasn't a blade. That was the hard way, you know, like, and even the way you can even hear it. And I believe it was Taz and JR's voice, like commentating, and you could hear it in their voice, like genuine concern. And that was absolutely an accident. And look, Matt Hardy is, I think he's surviving more than most people would have expected him to, given all the iterations that he's had and the legal trouble he's had with the broken character, trying to bring that to WWE. And I think he brought it there a little bit too late because when he came in when he returned at WrestleMania 33, in the triple threat ladder match, and I was there for it live, so it was awesome to see.
Me too.
Yeah, oh, were you? I was, and when people were complaining and chanting about the lights in your face, I remember that. But I was, I don't know, I was, I guess, middle of the stadium. I was lower level middle, but nonetheless, it was probably the pop of the night that night. And people after that were chanting delete, 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 delete.
Yeah.
And they, for legal reasons, they could not bring that character. And I think probably Vince was hesitant at the same time too, not really understanding that character. And, you know, Vince likes to go back to the comfort zone of what worked before you left. Well, let's stick you back here. I think at times we've seen that with John Morrison and The Miz. I mean, there's another example. But I think that the delete character, had it been brought in at the right time and been brought in when the fans were demanding it, I think could have really taken off. What about you?
I agree with you. But the thing that's tough about that gimmick is it's hard to, like, put into a box. And I feel like WWE likes to put people into a box. They like to be able to describe you in like 140 characters or less. And the thing about the broken Matt Hardy character is you can't really explain it. Even if we tried to explain it now, it would take us a while to like really explain what his character was all about. So I think that that's what it had going against it in WWE. If he literally just said delete and spoke his funny words in WWE, I think that that really could have gotten over. But I think you're right. They kind of did this a little bit too late. And actually, I want to talk to Matt about that. I want to ask him if he thinks that it could have got as over as it did. Like, he was a big reason, as over as it did in Impact. He was a big reason why Impact was able to stay afloat for as long as it did. I mean, Matt Hardy made Impact Wrestling interesting during a time when there weren't a lot of eyeballs on Impact.
No, I remember that. And I was not following Impact, I mean, other than kind of casually and seeing some highlights or maybe some big things that came out of the show. And Matt Hardy was consistently one of them. He was a foundational piece of that show. And seeing some of the things that he did on his YouTube channel and just the wacky stuff he would do. And it was definitely entertaining. And again, maybe that would be a great question, I think, and just a suggestion to ask him. You know,
thank you. I'm going to write that down right now.
Yeah, no problem. And so I don't know. So I guess my point about Matt Hardy, though, is that he is an embodiment of what performers should be able to do, or if they can do, to evolve and change and have that ability to know and have the finger of the pulse on the fans to know, hey, like, it's time to change something up. And again, that's probably easier said than done, given that it's not really up to them. It's a lot of up to Vince and creative. So I guess a little bit more topical, though, just some big things going on here. I'm very interested to hear what your thoughts are on this, because as we've gone to the Thunderdome in this virtual environment, which no longer has the NXT trainees playing real WWE fans. And it actually, I mean, and look, I'm not disrespecting them. They are truly fans. Otherwise, they wouldn't want to be in the business. But the fact is, they're kind of like state-run radio, right? Like, they're not going to boo who they're supposed to cheer, and they're not going to cheer who they're supposed to boo. I get it. But at the same time, the positive is when they were there in the Performance Center is like, hey, I love seeing fans there again, even if it's in a very limited capacity. It's like taking the soul out of wrestling when you take the fans out. And having the virtual fans there, I think from a visual perspective, looks good. Seeing all the different faces of true WWE fans that have no filter and are not there because WWE told them to be there. But they, I think, again, have done a nice job with the Thunderdome, but they've taken the voice out of the fans still. They're visually there, but the voices aren't there. And with good reason, you can't have 300 audio streams going, and that's a heck of a liability, too. I mean, you don't know what people are going to say or do, and I totally understand that, and there's really no way to logistically do it. But what are your thoughts? I guess first thing is the Thunderdome. How do you like that?
I think it looks great. I unfortunately think that maybe it's like 4 or 5 months too late, like, to have this idea. And I get that, like, it would take a tremendous amount of planning to put this thing together, but it looks great. Imagine, though, if this thing had been around for WrestleMania. I think that could have been really, really cool to see that visual. But look, this has been such a strange time for all of us. It's completely unprecedented what's going on right now. So it's hard to kind of have an expectation for what things should be like when we're comparing it to the pre-COVID world when, you know, fans could be in attendance. I think that WWE, AEW, and Impact Wrestling are all doing like a really, really good job of just figuring out how to continue to put on shows and how to continue to make it entertaining. I'm really curious to see how the Thunderdome evolves. I mean, Thunderdome's like a week old. I'm really curious to see how this thing evolves, how it continues to get better. I think it sounds better, even though it's fake crowd noise, it sounds better than the empty Performance Center of basically counting the steps as someone would run the ropes. So I think it's a step in the right direction. I just think that it hasn't quite been perfected yet. And with that said, AEW is starting to welcome back a limited amount of fans. I think it's this weekend. So I'm really curious to see if WWE will follow suit and go, oh, they can bring in some fans? Well, maybe we can bring in some fans. And I know that Daily's Place is going to run at, I think it's 10% capacity. So I think the capacity there is 5,000. So 10% of that's 500-ish. 500 people after not hearing fans for 5 months is going to sound like 50,000 people. I'm really interested to see how this goes.
I can't wait to see fans back, even if it isn't a 10% capacity. Now, you have to remember, though, if it's 500 versus 5,000, that means that those 500 people have an exponentially louder voice. So, yes. You know, you have to also remember that somebody screaming maybe something you don't want to hear is going to be much easily reachable on the camera's mic than it normally would be had, you know, 5,000 people drowning out the noise. At the same time,
if you're going to these, you know, limited capacity shows, you are a super fan for sure. So I think that we're also going to see like some real hardcore fans in the audience.
That's true. Yeah, because you are there and you're just like, you know, F the pandemic. I'm here, you know, basically like, yeah, I mean, you are. And like, look, eventually we're going to get back to hopefully the masks requirement will be lifted. The social distancing will be lifted. I hope, my God, you know, at some point this has to go away. I don't know if the vaccine will do that or who knows, but eventually we're going to have to get back to it. And even going back to the WWE network, I mean, and seeing fans, it's like you can exhale. You're like, oh, this is so much better. And it's not that WWE has not put effort forth. They have done, I think, a really, really good job with the hand they were dealt to go through WrestleMania the way that they did. It was honestly really painful as a Stone Cold fan. Probably, well, he's my favorite of all time. I know that's not the most interesting selection. It's very generic, but he is. And having him come out on Austin or 316 Day, in an empty arena with nobody, that was painful. It was like, no, it really, really hurt. And that was really like culture shock at that, or just like a slap in the face of reality when you hear Austin's music in an empty arena and he comes out.
The thing that's been so tough about the situation, not just for WWE, but for everybody as a whole, is we didn't know how long we had to plan for. I mean, we still don't. We still don't know, like, when the light at the end of the tunnel is going to start shining through. So I think if someone said on March, you know, what was that, 13th, when things really started getting shut down, if on March 13th someone was able to have the foresight to go, all right, this thing is going to last until Christmas. I mean, nobody would have known that. But if we did, WWE would have been able to, and everyone would have been able to go, okay, all right, this thing's going to last that long, we better start making stuff happen now. I mean, you watch some of those first episodes of Raw, and they clearly had the mindset of like, all right, we're just pushing this back a week. And like, remember there were certain episodes of Raw where they would just re-air the Royal Rumble? And then, like, you know, okay, so our show next week, and I'm just going to make up a, you know, city here. Our show next week in Syracuse is postponed, but don't worry, the tickets will be good for that show in May. It's like, and now we're like, now here at the end of August, we laugh at that idea.
No, it's absolutely true. And at first, like, seeing the empty seats, seeing Triple H, I'll never forget it. I don't think any of us will forget it. That first night when nobody was in the arena, it was eerily quiet. And it was just uncertainty, fear. You know, what's going to happen? You know, millions of people truly going to die. You know it's bad when Vince has to concede that, yeah, we can't have fans. Like, that's how you know. That's the measuring stick of the severity of things is Vince McMahon. I mean, he did it right. He was the first large conglomeration of any kind after 9/11. I remember the SmackDown after 9/11. I mean, nothing stops Vince McMahon. Even the snowed in Raw after Royal Rumble in 2015 with Roman Reigns, they still went on and did that show. So you know it's serious when Vince goes, damn it, you know, and he has to concede. And so given that, again, as you said, the first few weeks, it was weird. And hearing promos with no crowd, weird. And with the performers trained to talk and act and perform like there's an audience there and then there's none, it was weird. You hear things you normally don't hear. It became uncomfortable, but we slowly got used to it. We got past WrestleMania. They brought, quote, fans back with the NXT trainees, and they've done a lot of cinematic matches with the Money in the Bank, with the Boneyard match, the Swamp Fight with Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. So I guess in general, I got to ask, what do you think so far about the cinematic matches? I don't know if I want to call them matches. I guess the movies that they've been producing between the last, I don't know, 3-4 months that they've been able to do it. Are you a fan of it? Are you kind of like groaning at it? What do you think about the way they've done those particular matches?
Well, I think it's interesting, Matt, that when they first announced that they were going to do these matches that were filmed like movies, wrestling fans all across the world kind of collectively rolled their eyes and went, oh my God, like, are you serious? And then we saw the Boneyard match and went, huh, that was actually the best part about WrestleMania. Like, that was really good. And I think that WWE has made lemonade out of the lemons that they have. And I think that under no other circumstances would these types of matches work. I would be really, really surprised when things get back to normal, if we ever saw another cinematic match again. And I say that because, can you imagine sitting in Raymond James Stadium, 80,000 people, and the Boneyard match comes on, and 80,000 people have to, like, cock their head up and look at a Jumbotron for 20 minutes or 30 minutes? It just doesn't work. And so much of what the WWE does, so much of what pro wrestling is all about, is that live interaction with the audience. And I just think that it's a cool thing that's happening right now and a great way to pivot when they had to pivot. I just think it's going to be one of those things that we look at as a product of this time and a cool way to figure things out and a cool way to do things. But I can't see this being something that happens moving forward. I was actually really surprised that there weren't any of these types of matches at SummerSlam, which I felt to me was kind of an indication of like, of something. Maybe that they weren't working, maybe that they were overused, maybe that they cost too much to make. I don't know. But the fact that we didn't see one at SummerSlam was interesting.
It was, as you kind of get used to at least one of the matches being produced cinematically. And I'll agree about the Boneyard match. Well, personally, I didn't think it was the best part of WrestleMania. It kind of settled my fears that, okay, this isn't going to be as bad as I probably thought they could. you know, because at times you feel like they try to run from their own identity of being a pro wrestling company. They'll say they're not pro wrestling. They'll say they're sports entertainment, but that's how you entertain people is through pro wrestling. Like, yeah. I mean, so they can try to put lipstick on it all they want. I mean, and try to run from their identity. I mean, it's just a fact that yeah. they're a pro wrestling company. And you know, again, yeah. Vince, I remember even saying on Stone Cold's podcast, well, it's too Stone Cold. Hey, you know, we're not a pro wrestling company, although that's what my father did. We're sports entertainment. And I'm like, no, Vince, like, sports entertainment's not a thing. Like, pro wrestling is how you entertain the people. So that's what is entertaining people through a simulated sport. But anyway,
it's almost like it's a bad word to Vince. It's yes. almost like pro wrestling has this like stigma that he wants to get away from. Like in the same way that a porn star would not call themselves a porn star. A porn star is an adult entertainer. It's like, well, you can call it whatever you want, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. It's a perfect analogy for what Vince does. And every time I hear sports entertainment, I'm just like, no, it's still pro wrestling. And you can see, anytime you hear the word wrestling on a WWE show, you're like, whoa. Like, it actually yeah. catches your attention. I yes. remember, like, even when Ric Flair cut his promo a number of weeks ago, I think it was Ric Flair, it might have been Randy Orton, who said actually the word wrestling. And you could see them almost like flinch, like, oh, no, it was HBK who said the word wrestling before he got punk kicked by Randy a couple of weeks ago. And you could see him almost hesitate before saying the word wrestling, like, oh, whoops, I shouldn't have said that. Because it's one of those banned words that, for whatever reason, they try to avoid. Like, no, we're not wrestling. I'm like, well, no, you are. Like, we are still here for pro wrestling. And actually, pro wrestling to me sounds more legitimate than sports entertainment, which is very soft. But anyway, my last point I wanted to make on the whole coronavirus era, or however we'll look back at this time, is, and maybe I'm the minority in this, but I've kind of looked at this as, I actually expect WWE to kind of lower the bar in terms of their storylines. And actually, in a way, I hope they do. And let me tell you why. If you have a big angle going on, or you have a big return that you wanted to do, wouldn't you rather have it in front of fans that can react and make that moment even bigger? So they kind of have to go to plan B and C. That may not be as exciting. So I kind of mean it in that way. Like, I love what they've done. They've maximized plan B and C. But I actually don't want to see big returns that could be better in front of a live audience. Again, we don't know when that's going to be happening again. But to me, those moments and big storylines and big payoffs mean more when you have a crowd there to give it a soul. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I definitely think that we've all taken that crowd reaction for granted. Like, I think that that's something we'll never take for granted ever again. But I agree with you. If there's a big return that's going to happen, I mean, the Stone Cold thing on 316 is a perfect example. It just fell flat, and it was nobody's fault. It's just Stone Cold is such a huge star and always garners such a massive response that when you don't have that, it just feels weird. In the same, like, there's been so many moments across all the companies over the last 5 months that we've gone, oh man, that would have been so much better if Eric Young returned to Impact with a crowd, if Brody Lee debuted on AEW with a crowd, if Drew McIntyre won the championship with a crowd. But I don't know what the solution is in the short term, because it's not like we have a date circled on the calendar of like, all right, everything will be back to normal. We'll just flick that switch on November 1st and everything will be fine. You know, it's unfortunate that we don't know that. And if we did, I think that that's when companies could start to do some planning. That's when they could figure things out and go, oh man, we were going to have so-and-so return in September, but now we'll just hold it until we have that crowd in November. Unfortunately, though, we don't know when that's going to be.
I think that's the absolute worst part of the whole pandemic is we don't have the date. It's just indefinitely. Like,
it kind of feels like you got sent to your room. Remember when you were a kid and you did something wrong and you got sent to your room? You're like, go to your room for an hour. And then at like the 55 minute mark, your mom goes, I meant 2 hours. And you're like, what do you mean? Like, you said an hour. Like, in the same way that when this thing started, remember when it was quarantined till March 31st?
Yes.
Then it was, all right, okay, then we're going to push this back to Memorial Day. Then it'll be the 4th of July. It's like, okay, we'll just, like, when is it?
And exactly. And I guess another analogy would be like, hey, we're going to go on this diet, and you can't eat sugars or carbs, and it's only vegetables and rice or whatever, you know, pick your healthy dish. Well, for how long? Well, I don't know, just until I say so. it's like, so I have to cut out sugars and carbs and fats until you just say so, versus saying, you have to do this for 3 weeks and then they'll be good. Which do you think is going to be more successful, right?
And all of this is to say, like, I certainly hope that everybody's being safe, and I certainly hope that this thing, you know, gets dealt with in the best possible way. And I'm not trying to make light of the situation. It's just been so hard for anybody to figure out anything when we don't know when it's going to end.
No. And you see signs of like, okay, they flattened the curve. They, you know, things are down, the death rate's down, the infection rate's down. And you're like, okay, so like, can we get back to normal? And they're like, well, no, because then the virus will spike again. So like, what's the answer? The vaccine? But then what do states do? Do they mandate that they have the vaccine? Like, even when the vaccine comes out, people think that's going to be a cure-all. Well, how do you regulate who gets it? How do you know where they've been if they haven't gotten it? Are they denied access going here and there if they didn't get the vaccine? Like, it gets very, very tricky now. I don't know how this is dealt with. I mean, so.
I don't know. I'm very curious to see how this ends.
Yeah, I hope it does. We need to finish. We've had too many false finishes to make a wrestling. I mean, really, like people, they need to stop kicking out and just take the finish. And maybe we should just do the roll up. Just do the roll up, which is WWE seems to be very fond of right now. It's the most devastating finisher in wrestling right now is the roll up. So maybe we should try that on coronavirus.
That's the only thing we haven't tried.
That's really it. Just do the R-Truth 24/7 title special, the roll up from behind. So
you figured it out, Matt.
So some big current storylines going on, some big things that have started over the last couple of weeks. Number one, we just talked about the Thunderdome. Two big things that have happened, and I guess you can take them one at a time or talk about them both if you'd like. Raw Underground and Retribution. What do you think?
Raw Underground, I feel like people were too quick to go, oh yeah, this thing sucks, I don't like it. And that's kind of that's unfortunately kind of the thing with wrestling in general, where we see something and we decide instantly, like, yeah, this isn't for me. I'm not sure where this idea came from, though. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think that if you're going to do these worked shoot fights, I don't know, isn't that what wrestling is to begin with anyways? Aren't we supposed to be thinking it's worked shoots? So I'm not a huge fan of that. Retribution, I'm curious to see what the payoff is here. It feels like a storyline we've seen before, which has worked very successfully before with Nexus, which turned into, you know, an incredible faction. I'm curious to see what ends up happening with this. If once they get unmasked, do we still care about them? How do they continue to push this storyline? Because right now I feel like it doesn't have a lot of legs.
Yeah. And so kind of piggybacking on what you talked about with Raw Underground, people were very quick to dismiss. I think that's a very knee-jerk reaction in today's, as a pro wrestling fan especially, it's very easy, especially go on Twitter, Instagram, wherever, and just, oh, this is terrible. Like, what is this? And to some degree, I get the criticisms because, like you said, like, isn't that what wrestling already is? And if this is such a successful style, why aren't they doing this in the ring anyway? And furthermore, it feels kind of like a pro wrestling version of UFC. Like, that to me, like, there are oil and water. It doesn't, to me, it just, I don't understand the end game. I don't know what this is supposed to do to build new stars, but if you build a new star, then what do? Put them in the ring and put them on Raw above ground? And then, I mean, like, really, I don't know what the end game is. And how is this going to translate to into a live audience format? You think people are going to want to sit there and watch the Titantron for 15, 20 minutes? Like you said, I don't know. I know what they're doing. It's new. It's fresh. We don't really know where we're going, but people will tune in because it's, you know, get people talking. And, well, I feel like they don't have a plan. I feel like there's no long-term vision for this. It's just kind of like a break from the normal version of Raw, which is why it's Underground. I don't know what to – honestly, I don't know what to make of Underground. So
I don't know what to make of it either, because unless a huge star is going to come out of this or a huge storyline is going to come out of this, I feel like they should have just replaced this with, like, a cruiserweight hour like WCW used to do. Like, give us just some great wrestling, because this doesn't feel like there's any sort of payoff to it.
No, I don't see the payoff. And with Retribution, I'll say this. It felt a little bit Nexus-like when they first debuted, although Nexus didn't attack fans. They didn't attack or chainsaw the ropes or anything like that. So they certainly went extreme with what they've done and attacking the production crew and everything like that. And I will say this, it's pretty ballsy of WWE to pull from current events and put them into a pro wrestling show, which is why you're watching wrestling in the first place, is to get away from your normal life. So then you can escape it in this fantasy environment because they're even bringing that in. So it's pretty ballsy on their part. They got to be very careful of how they portray this, and God forbid they bring up like BLM or something like that. I don't think they would do that, but they are certainly pulling on things that are going on in the current regime of things. So that's, again, very gutsy on Vince's part to do. I'm glad at least this week that they have defined the groups of the members of this group. They've condensed them down, it seems like, from an amorphous blob of about 20 people to these select, six or so people that were standing on the ring apron. They've at least taken that step. I will also say that WWE has the single worst security in the history of security teams. If they are so concerned about their stars and their announced teams and their production, to not have security where it should be. And lastly, and I just can't get over this, if their entrance is truly going to be a flickering light and they're going to attack somebody, that is the single worst way to let somebody know that, hey, this is a surprise attack coming, right? Like, and what does somebody do? Is someone standing there at like the light switch going, okay, guys, you ready? And they flip a switch? Or does somebody have a remote control? Like, why is it a flickering light? That's like giving a heads up to people in the ring, like, hey, we're coming. I don't know. So that's just some thoughts.
These are all really valid points. Wow, you're so right. The flickering light, yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I just don't know, you know, how are we going to still be talking about Retribution and 6-8 weeks from now? Like, how is this storyline going to be able to continue? Because it's just right now a whole lot of the same every week.
It is, and I would at least like a mission statement from them. Like,
the other thing. But here's what's going to happen. What we are going to get that. Whoever their lead person's going to be, they're going to cut some promo, and we're going to go, that's it? I guess. I don't feel like there could be any sort of promo that would make us go, oh, yeah. That makes sense. I'm on board with this now.
Well, they're clearly a heel group. I mean, they've kind of established themselves as this heel group, and that the only sign that they've given us is they took spray paint and put the WWE symbol and then put a strike through it. Okay, so you're against the company. You want retribution against the company. You want revenge against the company. And many people have speculated, oh, well, CM Punk's the leader. I don't think so. I really don't think that CM Punk would do that. And furthermore, as I made my point earlier about not doing big angles with nobody there, not. If CM Punk's coming back, please, I'm begging WWE, do not make this an angle with CM Punk, if it is CM Punk, in front of virtual fans or, you know, simulated fans, whatever. So,
I will say this, though. If CM Punk were to come back, and this is complete fantasy booking here, because who knows if he's coming back, but what if we had a date when fans were allowed back in arenas? What if it went, let's just make up some dates here. I said November 1st earlier, so let's run with that. What if on November 1st, WWE said, it's our first live show back, it's our first Raw back with fans, and CM Punk's going to return? How big would those ratings be?
I mean, you talk about a needle mover, and if they promoted the hell out of it, and I think social media would blow up. You'd have the most anticipated wrestling show in years, and with not only fans back, but CM Punk returning. I mean, you're getting me excited for something that's not even real. And so, like, I really – do I think that's going to happen? No. But to your point, if something like that did happen, yeah, I mean, that would be not only just a quick shot of a rating. I think that would be sustainable viewers that you bring back on a weekly basis, not just like, oh, hot shotting. Let's pop the ratings this week and they'll tank next week. That, I mean, well, actually, while you're on it, I gotta ask, that was one of my things. Do you think CM Punk's ever gonna come back in a wrestling capacity?
I just can't see it happening. I just can't see him. I mean, he doesn't need to come back. Like, he's done everything he needs to do. I can't see him coming back. But I had a really interesting conversation with Will Ospreay. And Will Ospreay and CM Punk were like DMing each other about the possibility of having a match at the Tokyo Dome in January. So I think that while I would love to see that happen, I just can't see it happening. Like, he seems really content with how his life's going now. He seems really happy being able to put wrestling in the rearview mirror. So if I had to bet right now, you know, as we sit here at the end of August in 2020 in this wild world of coronavirus right now, I would say no. But what do you think?
I will say that I think, and I'm not, you know, again, I wouldn't bet my house on it, but I would say that he probably will, in an extremely limited capacity, maybe even more limited than Edge. And I think not because he feels like he owes anybody anything, not because I feel like he feels like he has something to prove. I think those answers are very clear that neither one is true. I think that if he came back, and I think he will, not extremely confidently, but again, I think he will, it would be on a huge stage that would, you know, it would be a long running storyline, say from like a SummerSlam to a Mania, or maybe like a late fall into Mania. It should be a WrestleMania main event, or at least one of the main events. And if he was going to come back, I mean, there's a plethora of people he could work with. And I think that he is the master of manipulation on social media. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing when he says something. And I remember him even putting out there on Twitter, which said something like along the lines of, like, I know a thing or two about Retribution. Something like that. And people lost their minds. Oh, he's the leader. He's the leader of Retribution. So he knows exactly what he's going to do. And to me, there's no better time to return than when everyone thinks you're not returning. So yeah. I think that, again, not very confidently, I think he will come back for at least one more match. Don't ask me who his opponent is, because I don't know. I'm not even going to get into that, but I think he will come back. But the, you know, time's kind of ticking. Like, he's not a spring chicken. And I think maybe in the next couple of years, I think he will, but.
I guess so I'm saying no, you're saying yes.
Yeah.
We'll find out soon enough, I guess.
That's one you got to do. Have you done CM Punk? Have you interviewed CM Punk?
Ish. So ish. I did I was the one who did that first interview with him on that red carpet when he was hosting the AP Music Awards, the Alternative Press Music Awards. He famously said to me that he was going to never ever come back to wrestling. So this was like 2014, you know, 6 months after he had left WWE. And it was actually, you know, ironic that he walked out of WWE in Cleveland, and I was working in Cleveland at the time. This awards show was in Cleveland, so it was kind of ironic. The place that he walked out of WWE was the place where we did this kind of impromptu, quick interview about whether he'd ever go back. But that's my only interaction with him. That's my only interview with him.
So this was prior to the Colt Cabana podcast that was just absolutely exploded.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was... This was like a 2-minute interview on a red carpet. And I remember they said, yeah, you can interview him, just don't ask about wrestling. And I'm like, come on.
That's like interviewing, like, I know, and I know you've interviewed Tom Cruise. That's like interviewing him and not asking him about movies. Like,
right.
I
mean, yeah.
You know, which, yeah. I mean, seriously. So, I get it. I mean, CM Punk he's a guy that is extremely introverted. And is hard to, I think, he's very cautious about what he says and who he talks to, and I respect that. And if AJ Lee were to ever come back, which people have been speculating, that to me, do I think AJ Lee would come back? People ask me that all the time, and I don't know. I think AJ Lee and CM Punk are very happy where they're at in life. CM Punk did his best in what he did with UFC and was not successful, but when you look at, if you've seen any of the documentaries on what he did with his training, the training, my God, it's something I don't think most people would ever be able to survive. And so I give him extreme respect for even attempting that. And I had so many people, oh, yeah, you knew he shouldn't have stepped in there. He's a pro wrestler. He's going to get his, you know, backside kicked. And come on, man. I mean, look what Brock Lesnar did. But I don't know. So I'm glad that you disagree with me on that because I'm very interested to see if it comes true.
Me too.
So a couple other things about the current product. What are your thoughts on The Fiend right now? We have and Roman Reigns returning because they're now kind of interlocked. How do you feel about that?
Well, to take the tagline of SummerSlam, I don't know if we saw it coming, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what I think about what The Fiend is doing right now. I kind of feel like he's been underutilized the last little while here. I just think there's more, and maybe it's because the crowd's not there that maybe they're not giving him 100% of what the possibilities are for him. But I don't know. I just think there's more for him. Roman Reigns coming back was great to see, and it looks like he's in some sort of a heel role. He looked like a beast, so that was awesome. Also, lots of comments about his new teeth, which, well, that was like a real stark contrast there, wasn't it?
Big time. Yeah. Big time. I thought it was like, and I look, if you have that much time off and you're spending it with your family and all you're doing is training like an animal and you're like, hey, no better time to kind of get these things done. But it does, they don't look bad. They just, it's just very, very different. It's like, whoa, like they're too perfect.
Right. But like, but there's lots of famous people that have veneers. Like, I bet you people don't realize that like Tom Brady has veneers just because they look so natural. They look so good. They fit his mouth. They're not overly white. But Roman's was like blinding the first time you smile.
It's not subtle. That's the thing.
It's not subtle.
No, it's in your face. That was one of the first things I noticed. I mean, it was like I noticed like his teeth and then, whoa, he's gotten bigger. And he cut his hair and he got a new shirt. So, like, I mean, in that exact order. And so, hey, look, I'm sure people will get on him about it. Like, I mean, hey, I'm not going to kick him for it. It's just kind of like it is very distracting. Because it's so different. I didn't even notice his teeth were that bad to begin with. I didn't know he had a big problem with it. I thought he was fine the way he was. But if he felt that you need to change him, hey, do what you want. Hey, I'm glad Roman Reigns is back. I will say that it looks like Braun Strowman has officially turned heel and is staying heel, and that Roman is now taking that babyface spot that is left by Braun Strowman. And it remains to be seen if at Payback this Sunday that. If he is indeed going to become Universal Champion, do you think they'll put the belt on Roman right away, or you think he'll have to chase the Fiend for a little while?
Yeah, I think he's going to chase him. I can't see him getting the title this quickly, because then what do we, you know, do we want to watch the Fiend chase? But with that said, how does the Fiend lose? Like this has been the crazy thing about that character, is it's really hard to make him lose. I mean, we've seen all these matches where it's almost impossible to beat him. So if Roman does beat him, how? You know, what makes the most sense?
Well, I think that – I don't know because – well, I will say this. Anytime in the last 5-6 years since Roman Reigns has been in and out of Universal Champions and WWE Championships, that anytime you're in doubt and you're not sure where WWE is going, I just look up and I see all roads lead to Roman Reigns. Like that, I mean, really, like as I'm driving and I'm like, where am I going? I'll just look up at Vince and I'll say, and I'll know immediately that's where they're going, Roman Reigns, because it always just feels like that's their destination, that everything else is a placeholder to get to Roman Reigns. It just has felt like, whether that's true or not, it has just had that feeling to me all the time, which is why leading up to WrestleMania, when everyone suspected it was going to be Roman versus the Fiend, people were like, well, Roman's just going to beat him. And they changed it because they knew that that was going to happen, and they didn't want Roman in that position.
But then it was going to be Roman versus Goldberg, which we would have to assume that Roman was going to win that match, you know, and become the champion in the same way that Drew did.
That's it. No. He was scheduled to. He was scheduled to beat him, and then Braun Strowman inexplicably which by the way, they never explained, which was weird. Braun Strowman just goes, oh, me next. And that was it. There was never, I mean, really, they didn't even give an explanation. There was nothing. How can you not give an explanation when it's the main event of your biggest show of the year and someone else just slides in? I mean, that'd be like a replacement in the Super Bowl. Well, how did that happen? I don't know. You know, it was first come, first serve. Like, I mean, there was not even an explanation. Maybe that's why he attacks Strowman, and we'll get some kind of reasoning.
That would make sense. Yeah, that would totally make sense.
Yeah, I hope so. But again, I'm fearful because the Fiend, the character, like you said, is the way they've booked him is kind of unbeatable. I mean, look what the whole Seth Rollins and Fiend debacle at Hell in a Cell last year that was just absolutely destroyed by fans for the way it was booked and the red lighting and the match stoppage, the whole thing. I mean, it really did a lot of damage, I think, to the Fiend and Seth Rollins at the time, who was playing still babyface. But I don't know how they beat the Fiend. They got to find a weakness for him, and we'll see. So one other thing that's going on in WWE, not one other thing, I could talk to you about a bunch of stuff, but some of the big ticket items. This to me is probably the biggest thing going on right now is Randy Orton, who has completely, I don't want to say reinvented himself, maybe reinvigorated himself and actually feels motivated and is on another level that we all knew he could be at had he actually, again, I hate to say this, but actually felt like he was motivated over the last 10 years or so. How are you liking Randy Orton as a heel right now, just punt kicking everyone?
I was such a huge fan of the Legend Killer gimmick, and we're going way back with that. Like, this is back 16, 17 years ago. I love the Legend Killer gimmick. I just thought it was so brilliant how he was able to work that into basically any segment every single week. So that's what we're seeing now. Like, you're right. It's like reinvigorated. It's that same gimmick, which worked so well back then to get him over for the first time. And it's kind of like he's doing that, but like 2.0. And it's like he has this new fire in him, which is so exciting to see. Almost a shame that he's doing some of his best work of his career, you know, in front of an empty arena, because it's exciting to see this Randy Orton. I'm a huge, huge Orton fan. So to be able to see shades of the Orton that I first started loving, you know, back in the Ruthless Aggression era, it's great to see this back, and I'm excited to see what happens from here.
I am too. This to me is Randy Orton. To me, for the first time that I can remember in maybe 5 years or more, is really making me hate him as a character. And I mean that in a very complimentary way. I don't mean that it is a channel changing or, oh, he's a cool heel, I'm going to cheer him because he's cool. No, like, I'm a 35-year-old guy that has been watching wrestling since 1997. My very first match I ever watched was Michaels and Taker in the very first Hell in a Cell. So, I mean, to be able to feel that heat, to be able to feel like he is a true heel right now, that you want to see somebody kick him in the head and send him to the hospital.
Yeah.
That, for the first time, like, again, I'm 35 years old. I'm like, I want to see him get destroyed to be able to believe, even though we know it's a work. This is what brings us to wrestling, is this kind of heel heat. And Randy Orton has been building heat and building heat for months and months and months and months. And I am loving it. And he kicked Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, Big Show, Christian, Drew McIntyre 3 times this past Monday. So, like, right now, Randy Orton is on another level and another stratosphere that I can't wait to see when he finally gets what's coming to him, how bad it's going to be. I don't know how they pay this off without Randy Orton being a bloody mess and being sent to the hospital. Like, really, that's how much heat he has on him right now.
And I think we can all agree that Randy Orton is so much of a better heel than he is a babyface. And that's not to say he's a bad babyface at all. I just think Randy Orton, the heel, there's something magical there. There's something special there. And you talked about it. It's like, it's on another level when he gets to do this work. It's almost like, I don't know, he embraces being just a total dick, and he's just so good at it.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, he is born to be a heel. It's like when Charlotte tries to play a babyface, or when Seth Rollins tried to play babyface, it's like, I'm not buying it. I don't buy it. They scream heel, and yet you're trying to get me to believe that they, you know, it's somebody that I should get behind. And Randy Orton has taken it and run with it. And it, like you said, the fact that he's doing his best work now, you could look back and go, oh man, we could have got this the whole time. Yeah. I guess, you know, like, oh, well, this, and we all knew while he was kind of sleepwalking through 10 years of his career that he could be this. We all knew it was there, that he just seemed like he didn't care. He's kind of like the guy in the, you know, doing a 55 in the 55 zone. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm cruising along. You know, I'm not going to exert myself, but he's so good, he can do that. And so we're finally getting and seeing the potential of Randy Orton, and it's better late than never. I'm absolutely loving this, and I can't wait for Edge's return, whenever that may be, and assumingly in the next month or two.
Yeah, let's hope that's soon.
Yeah, no, definitely. So as we kind of wrap things up here, I got to ask one thing about AEW to you. What do you think about MJF? Because I saw a little interaction with you and him on YouTube.
Personally, I can't stand him. professionally, I think that he's excellent at what he does. One of the greatest heels that's working right now. Mostly because there's really no difference between MJF the person and MJF the wrestler. And I think that at some point in time over the next year, he will hold a championship. Whether that's the TNT championship, maybe, you know, at All Out, he becomes the world champion. But he's so, so good, so bankable. And when you put a mic in his hand, it's so hard to not love to hate the guy.
This guy, to me, is going to be the reason, if it happens, that AEW becomes an absolute like machine over the next couple of years. Like, he's going to put them on his back and run. I mean, he is that talented. He's young. On a mic, he doesn't stutter. He doesn't feel like he's playing somebody else. He actually protects kayfabe. I have not seen him do an interview where it's not MJF that I see on AEW. I mean, he's toned down a little bit, but he's the same guy. I saw I think it was on Instagram or somewhere, him flipping off a kid at a signing. I mean, like, where do you see that? And I mean, it's magical to see him go all in with this character that is probably a lot of who he really is as a person when the camera's off. And that's awesome, because this is something, again, you don't see this anywhere, at least to my knowledge, at any other promotion, about a performer wrestler caring about what they see or what they do off social media. And do they just go, fans know it's not real. Who cares? This guy is all effing in, and it's brilliant to see his whole State of the Union address he did a couple of weeks ago that got millions of views on YouTube, rightfully so, I think was a career-defining moment for him. The way that he delivered it was brilliant, and so this guy, to me, scream star. Regardless of what you may think of him on a personal level, this guy is going to be and holding a champion. Like I said, I think he'll probably hold the belt at All Out and beat Jon Moxley, but this guy is, I think he rivals Randy Orton in some areas.
Well, I think that, you know, to kind of touch on what we talked about with Randy Orton, these people are great heels because it's fun to be a heel. And I think that MJF just leans into those parts of his personality that, you know, he realizes are just fun. And he also realizes, if I do this, it makes me slightly obnoxious, which will make people hate me even more. But, you know, people always talk about MJF on the mic, which he's supremely talented on the mic. He's also so good in the ring. Yes. And one of the things I don't know if everybody picks up on, but he's so good at making other people look good. His selling is next level selling, like Triple H level selling. Like, he makes people look so, so good. And I think that that's the true testament to whether you're a star. Not, you know, anybody can make themselves look good. But to be able to go in there and make other people look good, that's when you get to that next level.
That is something that is so underspoken about and underrated, I think, in pro wrestling today, that people just worry about, well, yeah, you got to look good. No, you need to make your opponent look good so that not only will the match be better because the selling's better, but also you'll have more people want to work with you because they want to make sure they look good too. I mean, there is just no downside to doing that. And the selling is something that I think as an entire industry could be improved. It, to me, the athletic presentation has overtaken what emotional investment used to take the place of. Like, it's all about, to me right now, it's not all the time, but it's athleticism, it's spots, it's 450 splashes, it's 10 suicide dives every match. And it shouldn't be like, it should be about the psychology, the story. Slow down, make less mean more. So that would be my one gripe about today's pro wrestling, even though I'll be a fan for life. It's just one of those things. So, but again, I know we're kind of winding down here, but some quick questions for you, I guess, rapid fire here. If you could interview somebody that you haven't yet, if there is such a thing, who would you want to? Maybe somebody that's passed on, like Eddie Guerrero or so forth. If there's one person that you could, that's alive or not, that you'd love to be able to speak with, who would it be?
So there are lots of people that I haven't interviewed, but number one at the top of that list is Vince McMahon. And look, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, Matt, if it wasn't for what Vince created. So I'd love to have a conversation with him, not necessarily about wrestling, but just as a businessman. Like, Vince McMahon, the entrepreneur, is brilliant. And I would love to find out what makes him tick, in the same way that I would love to find out what makes Steve Jobs or Elon Musk or Oprah Winfrey tick. Because I think that I think a lot of people kind of discount, oh yeah, but you know, he created this wrestling thing. Yeah, he created this billion-dollar company that really, or billion-dollar business that really didn't exist like it does now before him. So I'd love to sit down with him and have that conversation. It seems highly unlikely, but that's what I'd love to do.
All right. How about somebody that you've already spoken to that you can't wait to talk to again?
I love talking to Dolph Ziggler. And I've had so many great conversations with him. We've talked, I don't know, like 12 or 15 times. So every time I talk to Ziggler, it's just a great conversation. And he spends a little bit of time in LA. His brother lives here. I now live here. So it sounds like this thing could happen sooner rather than later.
All right. Where is your channel going? Where are your podcasts going? Do you have an idea of maybe where you want to be in a few years? This sounds like a job interview question, but it's more, I mean, it's not like, hey, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But really, I mean, I guess as a whole, your brand, where would you like it to go?
Well, I always say vague goals get vague results. So for me to just say something like, I want it to grow, you know, that would be extremely vague. Mm-hmm. I want to get 1 million subscribers, and I'm not that close right now. So it's a pretty lofty goal to say that, but I'd like to have 1 million subscribers for my YouTube channel. I'd like my podcast to be in the top 10 of the wrestling podcasts. And it's up there sometimes, but I would like to be up there with, you know, Jericho and
Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard, all of Conrad's shows, really. I mean, he just crushed.
Oh, God, I know. He's killing me. I know. Yeah,
maybe that should be a specific goal. Get Conrad to be my co-host, and then my show just shoots up to number one.
They have to talk to Jim Ross about that. I mean, I love their show. I mean, they've got a great show. I'm not knocking them. They are great.
Everything that Conrad does in the wrestling world is gold. So nothing but respect for him. So I think that I also just want the wrestling and my YouTube channel, my podcast, to be one of the things that I do. I moved to Los Angeles because I'm a TV host, and this is the place where entertainment happens. So I want to be doing more hosting. I want to host a national show. I'd like to be in more movies. I've had really small roles in movies. So if hopefully in 5 years, we can be talking about my 1 million subscribers, my Apple Top 200 podcast, my movie role that's coming out, and my national TV show that I'm hosting. That's the plan.
All right. Yeah, that's a good application. We'll take it under advisement. We'll call you back.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So last two questions very quickly. Who's your favorite wrestler? Got to ask.
Currently or of all time?
All time. Any era.
All time's The Rock. Just because of The Rock could make anything look cool and sound cool. And while there was a time there in 2000, 2001, when we knew how every Rock promo would start and end, I mean, let's be honest, we knew that every promo was going to start with, finally, The Rock, and then it would end with, if you smell The Rock's cooking. Everything in between that was always so original and so entertaining that we look back 20 years later now and go, oh, man. We'll never see that again. It was so, so, so good.
We took so much for granted. I agree. Yes. Last question. Do you have a favorite moment, a favorite match?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I was there. WrestleMania 18, Rock, Hogan.
Ooh.
I was in the 16th row. And I mean, I get goosebumps when I talk about it because it was just so special being part of that crowd reaction there. And it's funny, many years later, first time I interviewed The Rock, was in 2012. I said, you know, I was there, Rock versus Hogan. He's like, oh, yeah, who were you cheering for?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I was.
That's where we turned him heel.
I was cheering for Hogan. He goes, yeah, so was I.
Oh, that's such a Rock thing to say. I love it.
He's so great. And you know, quickly, I told the same thing to Hogan when I interviewed Hogan for the first time. And I said, I got to ask you, at the end of that match, did you know that the NWO was going to come out and beat you up? And he goes, I had no idea, brother. And he goes, the ref just told me to stay in the ring, which I thought was weird because it was Rock's moment. Rock had won the match. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was so crazy that they called a complete audible on that, that Hogan wasn't supposed to turn face. That was just supposed to be a match, and that, you know, was what it was. But they saw the reaction that Hogan got, that they called that last minute audible. The ref told him, Mike Chioda told him, stay in the ring, and the NWO came out the last second, beat him up, and all of that was completely unplanned, which blew my mind to hear Hogan tell me that story, like, in person.
That is awesome. I actually did not know that. So that is, I did not know that that was an audible. So that's pretty damn cool to know. And hopefully you get a chance to talk with him again. I mean,
I should probably like turn the camera on when he tells me that story next time.
Yeah.
This was like it was an interview I was about to do with him and Flair. And we were waiting for Flair to come in the room. We had maybe a minute waiting for Flair to come in. And he told me that story really quick. And I'm like, oh, I wish we had this on video.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure you get it. Just you got contacts. I'm sure you can get it in
touch
with him.
So,
yeah.
Your
people will call his people.
Sure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Chris, it's been an absolute honor. You got the Personality of the Year honor from the Broadcaster Hall of Fame back in 2012. I saw that. That's pretty damn cool. And so you have definitely interviewed household names multiple times, and it's been an absolute honor to have you on the show, to hear your perspectives, to hear different interviews that you've done over the years and moments, and your favorite wrestler and everything else, and especially the current product, as many of my fans are really passionate about. So, Chris, thank you so much. And again, before you go, I mean, let everyone know like where they can find you and you know, the upcoming shows that you have going on.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me on. Like, big congrats to you on everything you've done. Like, number one, to be able to have a show called the WWE Podcast is brilliant. It is brilliant. And just congrats to the success you've had. And I think that you treat your show seriously. Your podcast sounds like a radio show. And I think that that's the best compliment you can get in this world of podcasting. So congrats to you. Thank you for spending this last hour with me. I've had such a great time. And anybody listening to this can find my show, The Chris Van Vliet Show, wherever you listen to this. And I'm at Chris Van Vliet anywhere on social media and also on YouTube as well.
Awesome. And don't forget to check out, as you said, you're interviewing Matt Hardy next Tuesday. So that'll be...
Oh, yeah. So my upcoming interviews, I have Matt Hardy. I have Billy Kay coming up. A fascinating conversation with Daniel Pewter. We get into that whole Kurt Angle situation, which was actually supposed to lead to a UFC fight, which I don't know if anybody knows this. So that's a really interesting conversation. And speaking of UFC, I just had a conversation this morning with the current UFC heavyweight champion, Stipe Miocic, which is just a great chat. So lots of stuff coming up. And again, Matt, thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime. And it's been an absolute pleasure. Hope we get to do this again.
Let's do it again. I'd love to.
Hey, you tell me. So I have my people again. My people will call yours and we'll be good.
Yeah.
So,
if I get the job.
Yeah. No, I said you're in the running. Like, we'll take it under advisement. Thanks so much, Chris.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
You too.
All right.